Okay, first of all, I'd like to thank the organisers for giving me the opportunity to give this talk and doing such a great job with the workshop. It's been very exciting. So we've heard a talk this morning and earlier about sort of some basic, well, not basic, some loop quantum cosmology phenomenology and how you can use it to do things. And then we heard one just now from my supervisor, Marie, about lattice refinement and how important it is to get sort of the correct IR limit. And by lattice refinement, we should clarify, we just mean anything that the lattice isn't constant. That's what we're talking about. So I'm going to take a completely different viewpoint and ask a very simple question. Well, not a very simple question, a much more generic question about, is it possible to get any kind of phenomenology without specifying exactly what type of quantum gravity correction we want to look at? So so given an arbitrary quantum gravity correction, can we say something about this IR limit? And in particular, is it possible that some arbitrary correction term might look like an additional matter field? So the more exciting title is, can you get dark energy from corrections to the Wheeler-DeWitt equation? So this is based on some work I did with my supervisor about 12 months ago, a little bit less. Okay, so first of all, I'll give you some motivation for why I'd want to sort of ask this question and think about it this way, and then we'll go through Wheeler-DeWitt equation and sort of its solutions, which is nice and easy. Talk about general corrections and kind of what I mean by general corrections, and then I'll ask, is it possible to get dark energy from these corrections? And then this workshop, being about loop quantum cosmology, I better mention it at least once, so that's loop quantum cosmology, and then I'll conclude. Okay, so what we've seen in the last talk, and it's been known about for a while, is that within loop quantum cosmology, unless you have the old or the original way of quantizing things, had an instability. And basically, this instability came from the fact that the Wheeler-DeWitt solutions to the Wheeler-DeWitt equation, which is the loop quantum cosmology equations at large scales, oscillate very fast. And the larger the scales, the faster the oscillations. And eventually, you hit the resolution limit set by your underlying loop quantization procedure. And so basically, you needed the way out of this was lattice refinement, just, you know, making this resolution limit become smaller as the scales got larger. And one thing I'd like to point out is, at least I can't think of any other way out of this. This is something that's true for any theory of quantum gravity that has the Wheeler-DeWitt equation as a suitable continuum limit. Like in some limit, if it has the Wheeler-DeWitt equation, you're going to run into this problem, assuming that there's some presumably small scale at which corrections to GR become important within your theory. So this isn't just something about loop quantum cosmology. It's real. And typically we say that, you know, this needs to be avoided because we don't see corrections to GR at large scales, okay? And this is how we give evidence for lattice refinement or things like this or the improved dynamics. And the question I want to ask is that statement true? Do we actually see general relativity at the very large scales? Or is it possible that dark energy, what we're imagining as dark energy, is actually a deviation from general relativity that's only apparent on the very large scales? And this is sort of very speculative. It's much more just a, is it even possible that anything like this could be happening? And so the question then becomes, can the small-scale quantum gravity corrections to the Wheeler-DeWitt equation manifest themselves at large scales as something like dark energy? And I say dark energy because obviously that's the thing we'd like to sort out, but in more generally, could it just be another matter field? Is there anything else? You know, could it be dark matter, for example? Okay, so that's the motivation. So the Wheeler-DeWitt equation is this is what I mean. So here, the notation is probably a little bit different to everyone else's. This A is the scale factor, so this is just the gravity part. This is K is the curvature constant, which is just going to get set to zero, so you don't need to worry about that at all. And here's your matter Hamiltonian. And I've kept these numbers in, but immediately they're going to disappear, so don't worry about those. So this is the Wheeler-DeWitt equation. This is what I'm going to be working with, and at the moment, this is sort of what I mean by classical gravity. So we're looking for corrections to this as being quantum gravity corrections. And so a couple of things to remember. First of all, you can only formally write this down in a symmetry-reduced system. I mean, if you have infinite homogeneities, if there's infinite degrees of freedom, this doesn't make any sense at all. But that's fine, because this is what we do in cosmology. I mean, it's certainly in a zeroth order. We only worry about these things. Yeah. I'll show you in a second because I'll show you what the solutions look like, and I'll draw them because I don't know anything about them either. Just hold on for one second. We're not so worried about this in cosmology, and this is just a sort of first order approach. Is it even possible anything like this could happen? So we're not going to worry about the fact that it's symmetry reduced. Another viewpoint might be if this is supposed to be the continuum limit of some correctly understood quantum gravity theory, then perhaps we can do the quantum gravity theory properly, you know, get the continuum limit and then take the symmetry reduction, in which case this wouldn't make sense in general. But for the moment, I'm not going to worry about it. And here, this particular factor ordering has been chosen, but in principle, we're going to take the large-scale limit anyway, so all the factor ordering ambiguities disappear, so that's not an issue either. Okay, so to solve this, or to do anything with it, we need to put in something for the matter Hamiltonian, and I'm going to just parameterize this in exactly the same way Marie did, which is just say it goes, the scale factor dependence is just pulled out, and it's something, okay? We don't know what it is, right? Now, this looks pretty severe, and you're kind of, well, this doesn't make any sense. You know, I mean, what are you talking about? Well, when we're doing this, in a minute, we're going to be looking at the large scales, okay? It's the very large scales, classical cosmology. And when you do that, at large scales, the things we know about and things we want to be able to sort of reproduce are things like dust or cold dark matter, where A is a constant, radiation, it goes like -1, and the vacuum energy or dark energy, where it goes cubic. Now, these powers look a bit weird, but it's just because this is sort of an actual energy rather than energy density. So if you take out a factor of 8^-3, then you get, you know, cold dark matter goes like 8^-3, radiation goes like 8^-4, and vacuum energy is constant. So this is the idea. So basically, this parameterization delta just gives you the types of matter you'd like to consider, and it makes it easy to sort of see how things work. On a more practical level, you do it because you can then solve the Wheeler-DeWitt equation very easily. So, I mean, you could choose something more complicated, and you wouldn't be able to write down analytical answers. So when you just take that equation, just solve it, it's pretty straightforward. And this is what you get, and these are Bessel functions. And you don't need to worry about where any of the details here are at all, but really you just need to see that it's a Bessel function of A to some power, and the power depends on the type of matter you have. So this is your question. What do these things look like? Because I don't know what Bessel functions look like. I never remember. So here you go. Here's a few of them. So these are the Bessel functions, and this is the oscillations you see, okay? And so they oscillate backwards and forwards. And actually, you see here, so for delta is 2, it's the pinky one. So the largest delta, the oscillations are fastest, and actually they grow faster than all the others. So the higher delta is, the larger this parameter delta is, the quicker you're going to run into this resolution limit, which is why it's a problem for inflation, because delta equals 3 in inflation, which is sort of large number, I think we can all agree. 3 is close to infinity. So this oscillates very fast, and you run into your resolution limit. And this is the sort of where the IR problem comes from. Okay, so that's the Wheeler-DeWitt equation. It's nice and standard. There's nothing very sort of interesting or complicated there. So a problem for inflation. So that's what we've solved. Okay, basically we've just taken this equation and solved it. Yep. So it increases. So this is the thing. So for okay. Yeah. So one thing is, this isn't so much a time thing. Well, it kind of is. This is a scale factor. But really, the difficulty arises is that this is supposed to be a continuous thing. It's a continuous wave function in the Wheeler-DeWitt equation. But that's only an approximation. In reality, what this is lots of little dots because of the, say, loop quantum procedure. Okay, this is what it's supposed to be. This is Wheeler-DeWitt approximation. Just approximate something. Now, if the dots are sort of spaced this far apart, this red line looks fine. That's still a pretty good approximation. But if the dots are this far apart on the pink line, suddenly this pink line makes no sense at all. It doesn't even remotely resemble what the underlying discrete structure is. And you're kind of introducing lots of extra wiggles that just wouldn't be there in the discrete level. Does that make sense? The other thing to remember here is, so at the moment this is all just Wheeler-DeWitt, so there's no discretization at all. So anything, any of these in the Wheeler-DeWitt equation eventually give you classical GR as it stands. If it's continuous, that's fine. The problem is if this is only approximately continuous, then it doesn't work anymore. So this is what we solved so far. It's just the standard Wheeler-DeWitt equation. It's not really what we want to solve. Really what we want to solve is something like this, where you have, this is the standard Wheeler-DeWitt equation, then some extra term, which is supposed to come from some quantum gravity theory, which is probably going to be loop quantum cosmology, given where I am. So what are all these things? This is A-naught is just some scale at which these corrections become important. So you can think of this as A-star if you want to. You can think of it as mu-naught, you know, the scale, the discreteness scale of your theory, or approaching it somehow. And then this is some function. Now, we don't really know what this is, so the function could, in principle, be a function of the scale factor, of the wave function, and any of its higher derivatives. So how do we go about this? Well, first of all, let's talk about the corrections, first of all. You'd expect sort of semi-classically, if you can make this an expansion of some quantum gravity theory that has this term as leading order behavior, you're taking something resembling a Taylor expansion, so the next order term should be something resembling this. Now, it might be very higher order, might be much more complicated, but in principle, this is what something like this you'd expect. And formally, kind of any function could be written like this because you can just Taylor expand it in terms of the derivatives of the wave function. So at least, you know, there might be many, many, many terms here, but at least in principle, you could think of it this way. So obviously, you can't solve that. I mean, that's a general function. You have no idea how to solve that. So there's two approaches you can take now. One is you can go and explicitly calculate what this is for some particular quantum gravity system. And in a minute, I'll do that for loop quantum cosmology. I'll write down what this term is, and we'll see what the behavior of that is. Alternatively, because I want to kind of keep this a bit more general and just see if I can work out something in general, what we're going to do is say, well, why don't we do this perturbatively? Why don't we say, well, when this red term is small, what happens? And so basically what we're going to say is, you know, we can't do this exactly, but at least initially, so the idea here is, okay, there was a quantum gravity regime very early in the universe. We're not worried about that. The universe got large. It became very classical. We look around. It looks a lot like GR. Now, at the very, very large scales, it's starting to deviate from GR. And we want to see, well, how would it initially deviate? I mean, if these deviations were small, how would they behave? How would we observe them? So this is only sort of, in this sense, it's perturbative. Now, the kind of the ethos here is you assume they're small, and if you find that they're growing, you have to be careful. And this is when you're going to sort of, you know, this whole process is going to break down. And this shows you the instability that's in the old loop quantum cosmology way. And so sort of slightly more precisely, we're saying we're going to take the limit when this scale is much smaller than the scale, the numbers that are in front of your matter Hamiltonian. And also this whole function remains small. And this is the key thing, is that in the Wheeler-DeWitt, the loop quantum cosmology corrections to the Wheeler-DeWitt, these derivatives don't stay small. They get larger and larger. Okay, so this is what I'm saying. We're going to use this to evaluate what the corrections look like when they're small. So the point is, when they're small, we can just ignore that red term. Okay, these correction terms don't make a huge amount of difference. And so the solutions are basically the same as the solutions we had from the Wheeler-DeWitt equation. And we can now use those solutions, plug them back into this small correction, and see what it looks like, see if we've got some handle on what it looks like. And in particular, it's very easy to take the derivatives of our solutions, and it's written a whole load of them down here. This wobbly line means this is sort of only while they're small. Okay, so this is... You know, we have to remember we're in this small regime. And this doesn't look very nice. There's a couple of things to take out of it, though. First of all, epsilon is not necessarily a small parameter here. It's the number in front of your matter Hamiltonian. So happily, if delta is bigger than -3, which is kind of all the cases we're thinking of, the highest power of A has also the highest power of epsilon. So we don't have to worry too much about taking A being very large, and there's another term with E, with epsilon, is that also very large. So it's very obvious from here which term in all these brackets is the largest one when we take a large A expansion, so that's nice. The most important thing, really, is all these terms look like the wave function with some proportionality, some scale factor dependence in front of it. Okay, and this is how we've parameterized our matter Hamiltonians. Okay, so these all look like some kind of matter, some kind of scale factor dependence times the wave function. Okay, now the only thing I've kind of hidden in here is I cheated a little bit and I put these Z1s in. So what are these Z1s? Well, these are really abstractly defined here. And at this point, you should all be throwing your arms in the air and saying, well, what the hell does this mean? You can't take the inverse of something that's got lots of zeros. I mean, this doesn't make any sense at all. But really, this is just a notational thing so that I could explicitly write it as being proportional to the wave function. What this actually means, if we look at this Z1, it's Z1 times the wave function, so it's all this. These things cancel. So this term isn't really proportional to the wave function. It's proportional to this term plus this term. So it's kind of just hiding things in there a little bit. Okay, so really it's just that A0 is small, so that I'm just the wave function is approximately the wave function of the standard Wheeler-DeWitt equation. So basically the corrections approximately play no part at all. And we're going to solve the wave function. Then we're trying to see, so when they're very small, what do they look like? What is their form in the equation? Yeah, so to get the wave function, so almost you're saying A0 is approximately zero. that gives you the wave function. And then we're just going to plug that back into this term to see what it looks like. So in effect, you're just ignoring A0 is the easy way. But it's a little bit more complicated than that because you're saying you're ignoring A0 times F. So you also need to make sure F doesn't sort of grow very large at the same time. No, it's just, basically this is going to be some scale at which quantum gravity corrections become apparent. Nothing more than that. Yes, it would have to be. Because we've got the Planck length in here, so this could be, some number of Planck lengths or something like that, so. So at the moment, so at the moment this isn't really relating to loop quantum cosmology at the moment at all. So later on I talk about loop quantum cosmology. At the moment this is just some correction term and it's going to be somehow got derivatives in it. We want to see what it looks like. But that's going to come up in a minute, that's for certain. So that's what these terms are. So we kind of got to look at this Z a little bit more because I cheated a little bit and put the Z in just to make everything proportional to what I wanted it to be. So it's not very exactly right. So what is this Z? This is what some of the terms are actually proportional to. Well, it looks like this, and if you write it alongside the original wave function, you can see all that's happened is you augment these Bessel functions by a power or an order of one. So basically all that happens is things are either proportional to the wave function or they're proportional to the wave functions with the orders increased by one, which again, fine, nothing very exciting or interesting about that. It's not very easy to see what happens. But now we're interested in the very large scales, okay? So we want to take the A goes to infinity limit or the very, the IR limit. And when you do that, you can expand these Bessel functions, and it turns out this Z1 is just approximately this thing here where I've defined sort of the starred version as being, it's just the wave function again with the different constants. So if you choose a smart load of constants, if you choose them to be equal to each other, for example, then Z1 is just minus 1. So that's not so bad. If you want to worry about it, you can just say, okay, well, we're going to ignore any terms that have Z1 in it and just not consider those correction terms, but it's not so difficult to keep them in. So now we have all these derivatives, and we can go and sort of write them down again and take the large A limit. So here we've taken the large A limit, so we'll only keep first-order terms. So here I mean the largest power of A in all of them, so the dominant A term. And the derivatives end up looking like this. So this is sort of my Z and my Z. So the even powers don't have Z in it. So those are the easiest ones to look at. But even if you do put this in, this is some sort of number probably, something like -1 if you choose your constants correctly. And all of these are the wave function with A to some power. Okay, so they all resemble a matter component of some kind. So you can sort of see the pattern here. This is delta plus 1 plus delta over 2. This is 1 plus delta times 2 over 2. 1 plus delta times 3 over 2. So you can see the pattern arising, and it's 1 plus delta times beta over 2 for the beta derivative. Okay, and so what it basically means is, at least when these things are small, okay, at least when this correction term is basically insignificant, all of the derivatives are going to look like they're proportional to the wave function. They're all going to look like some kind of matter term. This is getting to the kind of maths I can actually do well. If you just add a scale factor to the front, it just adds an alpha, so that's pretty trivial. And now we have it. So we said at the beginning you can write any correction term as some kind of Taylor expansion in terms of derivatives, and now we know how to write all the derivatives down. So given an arbitrary correction term, we can in principle work out what the dominant feature would be as you approach any IR instability. That's easily enough. That's not so difficult. So now we want to look at some sort of evidence that I haven't just made this up. Thanks. So I haven't just made up what's going on. So here's just an example. I can't actually remember what the correction term I took was. I think it was like a fourth derivative. But basically, this is so the dotted line is numerically integrating this the full wheel with the correction term involved. Okay. So this is this is just a complete toy model. There's no quantum gravity theory in it at all. As to show it kind of works, the red curve is if you just neglect the correction term completely. And the pink line is if you include the type of corrections that, an additional matter component, which is what we've derived. Okay, and you see that, okay, so at the beginning everything's fine, and they all agree with each other. And then if you neglect the correction term, it starts to deviate from the exact solution. But while it's doing that, if you include this matter component that we have, everything looks like it follows properly. Now, eventually, the instability kicks in. These things might grow, and it's falling behind again. It's not particularly close to the exact solution. But at least for some reason, initially, in this thing, the addition of an additional matter component resembles the corrections correctly. Okay, so I guess, like I said, they look like an additional matter term, and so we can, you know, this is how we parameterize our matter term, so we can go and work out what type of matter they look like. And so if we want it to be dark energy, then we need sort of whatever term we have, which is going to be some power of derivatives. We need it to go like A cubed. And now this really is the kind of maths I can do. We need to solve this equation. And so remember here, A and B, alpha and beta, give you your corrections, okay? Specifying alpha and beta is specifying a type of quantum gravity correction. And delta is what specifies the matter you had at the beginning. So the first thing to notice is, given a type of quantum gravity correction, you know, to get dark energy-like behavior, it happens only for a specific type of matter. So here, somehow, in this kind of idea, you have whatever this dark energy is, whatever it looks like, is going to be related to the matter that's in your Wheeler-DeWitt equation. So this is, I mean, just very vaguely, this is kind of what you want because, you know, we find that dark energy and matter are about the same order of magnitude, or certainly seem to be related to each other. One other interesting thing is if delta is minus 1, which is radiation-dominated, then the only type of correction that does this is alpha equal to 3. And so that's an explicit cosmological constant there. So, you couldn't get quantum gravity corrections giving you something like dark energy during the radiation era. And I've said this kind of wrong here. This isn't exactly true because you can have alpha needs to be 3, but beta can be anything. So you need something that goes like, you know, a cosmological constant times any number of derivatives you want, but the derivatives don't make any difference. Okay, so for example, if we wanted to consider our universe as mostly made up of matter, then we're saying it's going to be matter dominated as delta equals to 0, then for a quantum gravity correction to look like dark energy, you'd have to solve this equation, and so you can either have one that just looks explicitly like dark energy, that's just a cosmological constant term, or any corrections of this form. I don't really know what the inverse power thing would do, so let's not worry about them, but any corrections of this form would also look like dark energy. Okay, and there's other possibilities you can consider. I mean, you could say, okay, well, we live in a lambda-dominated universe. Can the quantum gravity corrections give us dark matter, for example, if you wanted to? Okay, so loop quantum cosmology. So if you do, this is the old loop quantum quantization procedure. Now, if you take the large-scale limit of this, okay, the Wheeler-DeWitt limit, you get the Wheeler-DeWitt equation. This is a slightly different factor ordering, but you can do the same problem. And then this is the first-order correction. Okay, this is what it comes out to be. And this is the first order in the sense of mu naught over mu squared. And you've got exactly what we had before. You've got some power of A times some derivatives. Okay, and you can work out, using exactly what we did before, which one is the dominant term and how it behaves. And so this is how we can go and see, we can look at this instability if you want. So if you do this, if you parameterize your matter Hamiltonian exactly as we did before. Yep. Yeah, okay, no, that's true. So, yeah, no, absolutely. So this isn't what I call evidence for getting rid of the old quantization procedure at all. I mean, there are much better reasons for not doing it. I'm just taking this as an example because it's the easiest corrections. Okay, yeah, no, that's true. I mean, that's true. I mean, also, I mean, it's one other thing another way of saying it, basically, is these correction terms aren't generic. I mean, if you change your quantization procedure, you get different correction terms. So in that sense, absolutely, right? But this is just an example of, you know, you can apply it to some theory you have. And so here we had our matter Hamiltonian, and this is, we parameterized it exactly the same way, and when you do that, it turns out that this is the dominant correction. This is what it looks like as you approach this instability. Okay, this is how it would behave in our universe. So really the question is it possible, say, that term looks like dark energy? Okay, and this is, I'm not trying to say that, you know, the old way of doing loop quantum cosmology gives us dark energy or anything. This is just a sort of an example. Sorry? So it turns out this is the one that has the highest power of A. When you go through all this, you do it for all of them, it turns out this is the biggest one. And so there's a couple of things you can go and play with. You can see, okay, well, so what happens if I had matter-dominated universe? You put in delta equals 0, and the power looks like minus 1, so this correction term would look like radiation. So in a matter-dominated universe, the correction term grows less fast than the matter content that was there. So for a matter-dominated universe, this loop quantum cosmology corrections, that's fine. There's no instability in that case. So just as an example, what happens if you had delta equal to 2, which is some kind of odd stiff matter, I guess, I don't know. Then you put delta equal to 2 in here, and then this looks like A cubed. And so it looks like cosmological constant. So you go, oh, well, maybe there's something there. But actually, for a start, it comes with the wrong sign. So it's the wrong kind of cosmological constant. That's on top of the fact that we clearly don't live in a universe with delta equals to 2. So this isn't, you know, you can't really get the dark energy out of this. And this is the instability, okay? This is sort of how you can see the instability in this picture. For delta equals 3, which is a lambda-dominated universe or inflation, okay, the corrections scale like 8 to the 5. So they scale faster than the matter domination you had at the beginning, okay? So what happens is these correction terms get bigger and bigger and bigger, and they get bigger faster than the type of matter you had to begin with. And so this is the instability. I mean, this is where you can see things going wrong. That would also be true here. So here you had delta equals 2, and the cosmological, the quantum corrections looked like delta equals 3. So this would also be an instability. But for less than this, for delta equals 1, for example, you'd be okay. So in this sense, you can kind of see, well, you know, how far away from, you know, instability do you need to be? What type of matter content actually give you this instability? Okay, so let me conclude because I'm running out of time. So it's possible in principle for some type of quantum gravity corrections to the Wheeler-DeWitt equation to act like dark matter or dark energy or indeed a matter component of some kind. Now, so in loop quantum cosmology, the old way of doing it doesn't work. Okay. In the new way of doing it, you can in principle go and write it down again. I just, you know, haven't because it's well, we know that there's no instability, so it's not going to be something that can end up, you know, being... It has to get smaller as the universe gets larger, because we know it has the right IR limit. But in principle, anything else, any other type of correction you can think of to your Wheeler-DeWitt equation, so Martin's correlations and fluctuations, or if you were taking some other type of quantum gravity corrections, all you need to do is work out how you can write them down in terms of the derivatives. And you can immediately say, well, first of all, is it stable at large scale to have the correct IR limit? And is it possible that it would look like some matter component as we got to larger and larger scales? And basically the thing I want to take away is, like, look, this is all from small-scale quantum gravity corrections, and they can produce very large-scale corrections to gravity. And so this is the problem. This is kind of like this, you know, people talk about this as a UV-IR mixing, that changing the UV limit of general relativity can have really profound consequences for the large scale as well. Thank you very much. Excellent. Perfect. Happy with that. I mean, I was going to say, one of the only drawback about this is you kind of need to do it in the framework of Wheeler-DeWitt, so you need to be able to write things down as derivatives, which isn't necessarily the most obvious way of doing it. So effective equations tend to sort of not have, them, not easily be able to express them in that sort of form. So, I mean, maybe it's a bit more difficult, but it's certainly very easy to see how this instability arises and whether it's there in general. Sort of. I mean, so what you can do is you can go and write down this. You say, given a type of matter domination, what type of dominant corrections would give me dark energy, or indeed any other kind of correction term? And so that's kind of like whatever correction term you put in. If the dominant term in it looks like this, then you'll get something like dark energy. It's not quite the same as sort of classifying all possible corrections because, I mean, you could have something that looks like this plus a whole load of other stuff that happens to be subdominant, so, you know, it's not quite the same, but nearly. Yeah, no, this is great. So you wouldn't just say, like, oh, take an arbitrary correction and put it in and this works. You wouldn't say that's fine. I mean, this is just, if this fails, then you can give up. But the stuff like you're saying, you need all the consistency requirements. Exactly. No. No, absolutely not at all. I mean, you need to make sure the whole quantization procedure is consistent. I mean, this is that paper you're talking about. That, you know, you need, everything needs to be consistent at the UV level as well. And this is only the IR level. I mean, we haven't looked at anything to the small scale stuff at all. So
presumably, you can run this backwards, then, so you rule out
the correction. Yeah, I mean, vaguely. I mean, so you can, in principle, you can. The problem is you've got to be careful running it back because you very quickly run into this bit where things are discrete again, and the whole idea of wheel of the wit at all just isn't really valid. So you can only run it back so far, but in principle, yeah. I mean, so for example, if you had a correction, something that gave you a correction term that was supposed to look like, I don't know, a phantom field that was have blown apart the universe a long time ago, you can rule those out straight away. Okay, so this, you're right. I mean, this is the, so, because what I've basically done here is made everything proportional to stuff, right? And I've just forgotten about all the constants that were in front of it. Now, you're absolutely right. The constants are absolutely critical. So let me go to the home. Yeah, so in this notation, what you're saying, and you're right, is kind of everything I've shoved in here, in this epsilon, right? If that depends on something that's arbitrary, well, then that's it. I mean, you can just put whatever the hell you want in here, right? And that's the V naught. So basically, yeah, in the old way of doing it, V naught comes in here, and that's what you're saying. Yeah.
Can you go back to the first one?
Back one? Yeah. No, I think I've forgotten. So I've forgotten the all the wave functions should be functions of phi as well. If you have a scale field, no. Yeah, fingers crossed, like, at the beginning. Yeah. No, it's possible, because actually, so...
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. So actually, the one I use later in the loop quantum cosmology one is different to this, but... So... So that's the one that's probably more familiar to people who do loop quantum cosmology. But and also, of course, this is all in A rather than mu, so it's a little bit different. The other thing you should point out, of course, is that, so this is, parameterizing the matter Hamiltonian like this is only kind of valid in the large scales because, you know, as soon as the quantum nature of the field becomes important in the matter part, then, you know, it's not obvious how it would scale with the scale factors. So this is So it's basically if delta 3, then this is how you can see the instability in this case. I mean, possibly. I mean, to me, it's much more general than that. It comes from something. There's some correction term, and knowing the quantum gravity theory, we could, in principle, work out what that correction term is. I don't really care where it comes from.
So you don't necessarily, but you do need matter gravity.
Well, I mean, no. So, for example, you could have if it was a vacuum, say. You could have, I mean, I don't know what that corresponds to. It probably corresponds to delta being minus infinity or something. But you could formally write down a correction term in that case where just the Wheeler-DeWitt equation was only approximately correct, even in the vacuum. So you don't necessarily need to have the matter to have a correction term.